Welcome to Beer Buzz. I'm Liz, this is Brian, and today we're drinking with Matt Van Wyk from Ale Song. So Matt, tell us about how your love affair with beer began.
Well, like most people in my age, which is in the 40s, didn't have a lot of good choices for good beer. And so I really hated beer throughout that time when I was sneaking it out of my dad's fridge or whatever. And it wasn't until I got out of college and was in my 20s and started homebrewing a little bit, and the craft beer scene in America was kind of growing, and started to homebrew, started to travel to other breweries and see what was out there. And what I realized is beer can have flavor, because so many of the mass-produced beers were just like lifeless and boring. And that wasn't for me. So once I realized there was flavor in beer and I could make it myself, I kind of got hooked and started the passion that way.
Right on. So did you actually go to school then for brewing?
Yeah, I was a science teacher in my previous life. I have a couple degrees in teaching, and that kind of led into this learning about the science of beer, which got me really excited about it. And when I happened upon this little brew pub that was willing to hire me, well, first of all, I worked for free, but when they decided they'd bring me on board and give me some money, I thought I'd go to school. So I went to Siebel Institute in Chicago.
Right on. That's a really prestigious brewing school.
Yeah, it's a lot of people, when you say the name Siebel, they say, what the hell's that? I never heard of it. But they've been teaching people to brew since 1872. So they're the oldest brewing school in the country. And yeah, when you say you've went to school and graduated with a brewing degree there, it holds some weight, I guess.
Yes, it does.
Yeah,
definitely. So when did you decide you actually wanted to start your own brewery? Because we first met when you were brewing at Oakshire. Yep. How long were you there? And when did you decide you wanted to start your own?
So I've been a brewer for about 16 years, but I've brewed at Oakshire for 6.5. Started there in 2006. And to answer your question, when did I decide that I really wanted to own my own business? The answer was really never, and I still don't know if I do. I do. But I had a very good role at Oakshire and many of the other breweries I've worked at. And I have, in my career, watched people who are the owners of companies, and it's very hard, and it's stressful, and it's time-consuming, and I've seen relationships break up over not only breweries but all businesses. So, because I had a good job, I had a creative role at Oakshire, which I really enjoyed. I figured I would never take that jump and become a brewer, and then I did, or become a business owner, and then I did.
So, what was the impetus?
You know, one of the there's several, but one of them was the right timing with the right people. I have two very talented business partners. You know, they say behind every good man is a great woman, and behind every good brewer or business owner are probably two partners who are smarter than them and more talented. And so we really work well together. And Brian, who was one of my two business partners, came to me. He was our quality lead at Oakshire, and he was hatching this plan to start a brewery that was focused on barrels and the art of barrel aging. And he ran it by me and said, hey, you know, maybe we should do this together. You've been brewing long enough. You can be the head brewer. This is going to be your thing. And I said, no, I got a great job here. Give me a business plan and I'll look at it. He gave me a business plan. I was at a point financially in my life where it was a good timing. And I think sometimes when you've just been there long enough and doing it, you realize, I think I could do this myself, especially if I don't have to do X, Y, and Z that my business partners will take care of, because I could never do it on my own. I need someone who's smarter than me and more talented than me, and I found that. And so that's kind of how it all came together to decide to take the plunge for Ale Song.
One of the things I found really interesting when I heard that you were starting Ale Song was that it was, you know, you were outsourcing, you know, the wort and working with Nick over at Block 15.
Yep.
And then you were doing just barrel aging and blending on your premises. Now, did you do a lot of that at Oakshire?
The way we do it at Ale Song is unique, and I've never done it like that at another brewery. So we didn't buy a brew house. We just have fermenters and a bright tank and a bunch of oak barrels. And what we do basically is rent a brew house. We go up to Block 15 and it's on a day they're not brewing, and we get to use their brew house and make the wort. So I take up the grain, I take up the hops. We just use their system and power and water. And we go through the heat exchanger, knock out into totes, put them on our truck, and head down to Eugene. We ferment in our tanks in our brewery, as well as age in the barrels, and then we bring it back to a blending tank where we do the packaging. And so everything is done in-house except for that wort making, which is done at Block 15.
So would you say that's a pretty unusual and unique model?
It is. Certainly we didn't invent it. We stole it from friends, you know, beg, borrow, and steal, and do whatever you can to get by. We have great friends in Colorado who are doing it. I know there's some breweries in California doing it. And what you realize is a lot of people have excess capacity where not many breweries, except for the bigger guys, are brewing every day of the week. So even if you have a Saturday open or a Sunday open, the host brewer might as well make some rent money off of their system. So it's a unique way, and what the greatest part is, we didn't have to drop up to $200,000 in capital startup, and so because of that, I have a paycheck now. So I can pay myself a little bit because of that, not needing to have that big capital investment.
Yeah, it's also a great way for all those brewers out there to, you know, make some money on their initial investment because they're not using it all
the
time.
There's nothing worse than buying that and then watching it sit there. You know, in a brew pub situation, you can sort of you can use that as marketing, say, look at my shiny tanks and come in and drink beer here. So that's kind of okay. But if you have a production brewery, you need to be using it to make the money on it. Otherwise, you're just not getting your ROI on it. So it works for them, works for us.
Right on. So how hard was the first year? When did you actually leave Oakshire, start Alesong, and what were the first, you know, just to walk me through your first year?
I left Oakshire in the fall of 2015, and my two business partners, Brian and Doug, were already kind of working full-time on the business. I left Oakshire and started in with them, but because we have a brewery that's focused on barrel aging, most of the time when you start a brewery, you have 3 weeks from when you start brewing and you have something to sell. And when you have to age in barrels, you don't have that luxury. So we knew we had to first get the brewery up and running, get legal with the TTB, and then wait for some barrels to mature. So the timeline looks like this. We were legal to brew March 1st of 2016. So we're not even a year into legal brewery yet. Actually, we're just over a year from being legal. We brewed our first batch March 11th of 16. Sold our first keg of beer June 1st, our first bottles August 20th, and here we are in the beginning of 2017. So we're just a year old and just getting rolling, I guess.
Just getting rolling, but winning gold at GABF your first year, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys were like the breakout kids.
Yeah.
It was really extraordinary to watch. And having known you and seen, you know, your path and how you guys have evolved, and it was just such an extraordinary win. And that's definitely one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show and just hear about how that, you know, exhilaration and that instant sort of recognition and payoff felt.
Yeah. It was crazy. The beer we won gold with is called Touch of Brett, and it's a Brett Saison aged in Pinot barrels. It was the fourth batch of beer we brewed. We were just, you know, not even six months into our company, and we were fortunate enough to win gold. But, you know, like I said, I've been brewing for a while. I've got two talented partners, and so I think we had a head start on some breweries. You know, if you were doing this and you just started from scratch, maybe you were home brewing, or maybe you had one assistant brewer job and you jumped into this, it would be even more challenging. But we had some experience behind us, which helped. But it was pretty amazing. Because I've been to GABF, the Great American Beer Fest, since 2005, I realized that it's really hard to win awards, especially because there's now 7,500 beers that are judged. So mm-hmm. Winning is awesome. So when you win, you're very excited. When you don't hear your name called that day, it's just like the biggest letdown ever, because you've got this room full of thousands of people and they're all excited to hear your name called, and you know how much work and effort you put into it and money you spent into it. the last thing you want to do is walk away and watch all of your buddies elated and screaming about their awards. So I've been on the side of not winning before several times, but this one was nice, and it was really great for us to get started in that way. Mm-hmm. Because even with some experience that I had, we walked into some accounts and we sold some beer, it was like, let's see what you're doing. Alesong, don't really know you. Matt Van Wyk, who the hell are you? No one knows me just because I've been a brewer in Oregon for a while. But then you win an award, and then we just recently got named Best New Brewery in Oregon by the Oregon Beer Awards. And so all of a sudden people hear us, and then they start to see you, you know, social media and in other publications. And it starts to snowball, and right now we need to buy some more tanks because we can't make beer fast enough.
So what was the worst advice and the best advice you were given as you were setting off on your own and starting this business?
I've been given a lot of advice. The worst advice probably was, yeah, go ahead, start a brewery. I don't remember who said it, but they were idiots. No, that's not true. I've gotten lots of best advice. You know, people, this one's easy. Everyone will tell you it's going to cost more than you think and it's going to take longer than you think to get going. And those are always true. I'll give you a piece of good advice I got, which has kind of stuck with us, and it actually became a beer name, and I'll tell you how that links in. We were starting up the company, and we were looking for investors, and most of the people that invested in us in the beginning were family, friends, some acquaintances in the industry, things like that. And we had one potential investor who was a winery owner in California. And he, one of my two business partners, my business partner used to work with him, for him. And we sat down in his beautiful winery down in California, in Napa Valley. And he's talking to us about his brewery, or his winery, sorry, and the wine that he makes. And this is one of those wineries where you have to get on a list. You just don't find it wherever. It's pretty high end and it's pretty rare stuff. And he spends the time talking about himself and his winery and how he built his business. And we wanted to pitch him our business. We were trying to say, hey, we want to tell you what Alesong is. But it was fine. We just listened. You know, when you go asking for investment money to start a business, don't speak unless spoken to. Wait till the cues. So we listened.
Also good advice.
Yes. And he told us a lot. And he's a great resource for us. Because he did the same thing. He started a small company and he's a very successful businessman now. But one thing he said to us was, he said, guys, I want to tell you one thing. You're going to have all kinds of barricades in front of you, hurdles, walls. People are going to put walls up in front of you. You got to fucking knock them down, he said. He said, you ever seen a rhino suit? And we're like, rhino suit? What do you mean? He goes, have you seen a rhino? Yes, we've seen a rhino. Big horns, big animal. When I get to the point where I'm getting walls put up in front of me, I'm getting barriers put up in front of me, he said, I put on my rhino suit and knock those damn things down. Just knock them down.
Cheers to the rhino suit.
and we're sitting there, the three of us are just like, you know, three guys just trying to get some money for start up a business. And yeah, rhino suit, got it, okay. Beer name. So this says Rhino Suit right here. We made a beer called Rhino Suit, and this is the mocha version of it. But it's an imperial milk stout aged in bourbon barrels. It's big ass beer, 12%, and we knew that Rhino Suit had to be a name.
And it had to be a big ass burly beer, right? Yeah, that'd knock you on your ass.
Definitely break through.
Yes, if you just chug that beer right now, you will break through the wall. That's your challenge. Do it. Yes.
So I assume you got this winery investor on board. Do you now age your beer in his barrels?
We did get some barrels from him, fortunately. And he makes some great Pinot Noir. And we've stole some other ideas in branding from him, too. But I don't think he's watching this, right? Okay. I think he'd be fine with that. I think he'd be fine.
If a rhino comes busting, we'll
marry you.
We do have some California Pinot barrels from them. And there's actually a distillery down there, too, that we got some barrels from because it was right next door. So we just grabbed some of those on our trip down there to get barrels. So, yes.
Cool. So if we were to go to Alesong, you have a tasting room in just outside of Eugene. Tell us about your set up? Is it an old farmhouse? What's the vibe? And
so right now we just have 4.5 acres and a half of a building on it. So we started operations in Eugene. We just have a warehouse space. We don't have any open to the customer hours. Well, actually, that's not true. 4 to 6 on Thursdays, we do dock sales. But we really don't have a forward-facing pub or tasting room or anything like that.
Well, that's because I'm not in town yet.
That's right. When you come to town, it'll be open. We purchased 4.5 acres right at the southern end of the Willamette Valley AVA. It's right Beautiful. Beside King Estates Winery. We share a property line, actually. And so when people are out in the country checking out the great wines that are out there, we're hoping they'll cruise by our brewery and have some beers. We're building this barrel house and tasting room. It'll have a huge patio. In fact, it'll be a small tasting room with a bigger patio that you can sit outside on picnic tables. We're hoping to have food trucks. We're hoping to provide some cheese and charcuterie. We're hoping to, you can bring food and have a picnic. It's family friendly, dog friendly. We're hoping that we can, roam the 4.5 acres. In the spring, we got a little creek that trickles through. It's a pretty neat place to just relax, enjoy the scenery, and enjoy good beer.
Sounds dreamy. So yeah. Will that all be ready this summer?
We are racing as fast as we can. As I said earlier, everything costs more and takes more time. And we had a lot of permitting process stuff that took a while. And we thought we'd be open already. We thought we could have a soft opening in the wintertime and ease into being pub owners, tasting room owners. But it turns out we're going to be racing to beat Memorial Day. And if we can get open before summer starts, we'll be thrilled.
And so how far is that from, like, say, downtown?
It's roughly between 15 and 20 miles outside of town. So, it's a beautiful drive. It takes about 20 minutes. And like I said, we have about 14 wineries that are pretty close to Eugene. And so the great news is it's kind of on the wine trail. And you can hit both at the same time. Yeah. Yep.
So Matt, you've been in the brewing industry for quite a while now, and you've really started this business that's quite a unique model. The range of beers that you've brewed is extraordinary. Who do you think is doing some really interesting stuff or exciting stuff in the brewing world right now?
I could name a long list of breweries who are doing great stuff, but I know we don't have time for that. But just off the top of my head, I would say Ale Apothecary in Bend.
Yes.
Paul is he is such an artist, and I respect him because he started his business and decided to do what he wanted to do rather than, the market wants me to do this, so I'll do it. Or I think this can make me a lot of money, so I'll do it. He says, I want to make these beers, and I want to make them this way, and here's how I'm doing it. So I've got mad respect for Paul and Ale Apothecary. It's so awesome. Another one here in Portland is the Commons. They make such great beer, and great people too. Mike and Sean and the whole crew over there, they're so just knowledgeable and friendly, and their beer is just kick-ass, and it's so creative. And I just found out yesterday that we have a collaboration coming up with them. So I think in April we're going to make a beer together, which is awesome.
Great.
That's two. Let's see if I can give you a third one. Probably the third one is Block 15, who we brew our wort at their brewery. Nick's another guy who said, this is how I want to run my business. He's kind of, Block 15 makes great beers. And, Sticky Hands is what you have to get in cans right now. It's the hoppy beer, and it's delicious. It's absolutely great. But he's got a huge barrel program. He's got all kinds of beers that are along this line in nice bottles. And a lot of people don't know about it because you have to drive to Corvallis to get most of it and get them from him. But he just kind of does things his way. And I have a lot of respect for people who don't just jump on trends or do things because they think it's the quick and easy way. And hopefully I can do that myself with my business, and hopefully it's successful.
Awesome. Well, so far so good.
So whether or not you had one when you started or maybe where you are now, do you have a philosophy of beer, of drinking, of imbibing? Is there something that is like sort of your guiding principle or a way that you would describe your view of beer?
You know, we have kind of a view at Alesong, and I'll try to explain this without the marketing shtick, because you know I can make it all verbose, and but you can go to the website and see that and how we wrote it. But we called our company Alesong because not only do we love music and you know it's kind of guiding in a lot of things we do, but really how we came on that name was because of the blending part of our business. We take barrels. We brew a lot of beer, and it doesn't become, beer goes in tank, beer comes out of tank, goes into a bottle or a keg, and then you drink it. It's not batch to batch. It's make wort, get beer fermented, put it in barrels, and then go try the barrels, then go start blending them together. So what you've got is all these different threads coming together, and so many types of art, I think, are this way, where you've got many different pieces coming together. So if you think about an orchestra or a five-piece band or something like that, it's not just a single note. It's not just one person playing a solo or even a duet. You have to have all these things woven together to make something more beautiful than a single thing by itself. And so every time that we're trying to blend beers, we're creating a new brand, we're thinking about those things and how can we bring more depth, complexity. And the last part of that analogy is this is something that's close to us, that we are like, I love this. This is beautiful. It's my art, but people can interpret it how they want. Someone can pick this up and say, it's shit. Great, it's art. No, it's not. It tastes like shit. If you don't like sour beers, you might say that. But that's for each person to interpret it. It could be a band that you'd have the same like it or hate it sort of thing. It could be a painting on the wall in the museum, like it or hate it. So we think we're creating art, and we're trying to do it kind of how a musician might come together and compose something richer and more complex than something by itself. And if we can continue to keep that vibe and that philosophy as we blend beers together, we think we'll make some pretty tasty beers.
So not only an openness to spontaneity and creativity, but also collaboration,
yeah.
And playing to each other's strengths.
Yep, absolutely. And I kind of think about wild beers and spontaneous fermentation as kind of jazz. It's like, that barrel's kind of going off on its own thing, kind of riffing over here, and just let it go. It's might come out groovy, might crash and burn, but the rest of the band will pick it up and we'll be fine. We can color outside the lines, we can color inside the lines, but the biggest thing is trying to make something that's delicious and wonderful that other people are going to enjoy. And that's what I've really liked personally, take aside the Alesong thing. Why are you a brewer? Why do you do this? I'm not very artistic. I can halfway play a couple instruments. I can't sing worth a lick, and I have no drawing or I can't do the murals that you put on the wall. It wouldn't happen. But what I can do is make beer, and I try to give as much of artistic outlet into beer making as I can. So hopefully that's working.
It sure is. Well, cheers. Thanks so much for coming on the show today. Cheers to the rhino suit. I'm taking that one home with me too.
All right.